Welcome to Southwest Virginia Beyond the Narrative, a podcast created and hosted by Christiansburg Institute Incorporated. Beyond the Narrative explores the 100-year legacy of the Christiansburg Industrial Institute, Southwest Virginia's first African-American high school for the formerly enslaved. Through the lens of this historic institution, the podcast reinvestigates U.S. history, spanning slavery, emancipation, Reconstruction, and the Civil Rights era. The podcast explores race, history, and society today through interviews, critical discussions, and conversations, emphasizing community education, intergenerational empowerment, and public learning. Today, I have with me two members of the New River Blue Society, who I'm eager to welcome. Let's start off by introducing our guests.
I'm Vernon Kelly. I'm the president of the New River Blue Society.
I'm Thor Haynes. I am identified on some emails as the director of the Blues Initiative.
Very good. And we have Thor and Vern on the podcast to share a little bit about the work of the New River Blues Society and blues music. And we're just going to kind of wrap back and forth and have a conversation about why blues music is dope, important, and then what is kind of the mission and the work of the Blues Society in the New River Valley. Cool. I'm going to start with a question. The first question I guess I have for you guys would be, kind of what is the origin story of the Blues Society? For someone who doesn't know anything about the Blues Society, could you kind of share, you know, what's going on today in that group?
Well, the Blues Society, New River Blues Society, actually started a little bit before I was involved, and back in 2017, and maybe even talks in late 2016, but mid 2017, they got their IRS, 501c3, mm-hmm. and their State Corporation Commission documents in. But some folks that were blues lovers, I do know that they had at one time been connected with the Blues Society in Roanoke, which is pretty much since folded, I believe. Hmm. But they were in this area, and they just got together talking and decided to start putting something together. And some of the folks was the original person who really got the ball rolling was Huck Bowles, who's still active with us and helps us out on occasion with stuff. Michelle Canterbury, who's still on our board. Ray Williams was a board member, and they had an attorney that helped them with their documents. Joel Jackson served on the board. And then Whitney Bowles, Huck's daughter, served as the original secretary, and Tina Thompson was the original treasurer. Started off with a very small group, and that was how it got going. And then over time, you know, myself and others got involved, and they added more people to the board, and it's grown pretty rapidly in the last handful of years. I mean, obviously COVID slowed us down a little bit, but even through COVID, we did pretty well of keeping the blues going by doing shows on Facebook and stuff, having musicians play live. So we've done a pretty good job, I think, in the last 7 years overall.
And you said 7 years. So 7 years the Blues Society has been a nonprofit. That's kind of when it was
right. Mid 2017 is when they got their official documents. But I know that they had started working on it. And again, I wasn't around when they were doing that. I wasn't aware. But they'd been working on it, obviously, having some conversations, getting their bylaws together, things like that. Then once they got their acknowledgments from the IRS and the State Corporation Commission, they were off and running officially, if you will.
And so we'll pin for now. We've got Vern, the chair of the board for the Blues Society. We also have Thor, and Thor, we'll come back to Vern, but Thor, could you talk a little bit about your love of blues music and how that brought you to the Blues Society?
I have loved blues music since I was a child. I used to drive around with my dad, and we would listen to most notably Ray Charles and James Brown. And that music just brought me so much joy. And that led me to my brother's record collection, which included Miles Davis. There's so much blues and jazz. It's wonderful. Miles Davis, the Allman Brothers, John Lee Hooker, holy smokes, John Lee Hooker, and Howlin' Wolf, and it changed my life. The song Who's Been Talking by Howlin' Wolf is such a mysterious, spooky sounding song with such profound lyrics. And it just rocked my world, even as a kid, when all the kids around me were listening to, in my neighborhood, heavy metal or hip hop. That was it. And I was this outlier. But that said, there were plenty of folks in those days that loved the blues, in and outside of my family. And as I've moved around the country, I've seen blues scenes really thriving and really helping people excel in all kinds of ways. Young people, old people, an old person who may be disabled, but oh boy, they can still play harmonica like they did in the day. So let's bring them up and let's give them some love and celebrate that elder. Children who have these gifts, and we want to develop these gifts. These are gifts. They should be cherished. And blues music is a gift to cherish. Its place in the world, its place in history. And I have enjoyed being a part of it. And I get a little, here's the thing. Bluegrass has had this sort of lobbying or cultural force behind it. In California, for example, there are tons of great bluegrass acts in California. And bluegrass is not from California. And people love it and foster it. And you can find plenty of great bluegrass acts from California. And we don't have that same infrastructure for blues, but we try. And we have some of it, absolutely. And in the Blues Initiative, we're working on it. But if a kid wants to go to fiddle camp or banjo camp or whatever, living where we do, you know, you could find one this afternoon. Sign them up. You can go to the races. Spend the next 5 years of their life doing this stuff with other kids just like them with similar interests, local teachers. And then shucks, they might be a touring musician, or they might be just a person who loves to play music with people, and that's a gift they'll celebrate for the rest of their lives. And I'm jealous, simply put. I hope that's okay to say. I hope that's okay to say. I'm jealous as heck.
Yeah.
And I'm particularly jealous of it because in terms of the world, blues is a much more far-reaching genre, whether people know it or not. B.B. King played around the world. B.B. King was an ambassador to the world in a way that lots of bluegrass acts, as spectacular as they are, as skilled as they are, as much as they celebrate their culture. You know, I guess I don't know the bluegrass scene in Croatia or Brazil or Paris, but I do know the blues scenes there somewhat because their acts come to Memphis every January for the International Blues Challenge. So they are vibrant. Blues is all over the world. There are at least 150 blues societies in the world.
Wow.
At a given moment. All over the world. And
So we're talking about blues music and your love of blues music. You shared about young people and elders. Intergenerational. And then you talked about the Blues Initiative, which I think is super dope, and I really believe in it. And I think more people need to know about it. Can you share a little bit about what is the Blues Initiative and why is it important?
The Blues Initiative is a program to get blues music to young people. It could manifest itself in a lot of different ways. It can manifest itself in lessons, in different instruments, in vocals. It could manifest itself in class presentations, in library presentations, in museum presentations, The classes have ranged from yesterday I did two presentations for college kids. In the morning I was at Roanoke College in a spectacular writing class where we played live music for them. And we gave out harmonicas. And that's kind of my own personal little deal. If I were a saxophone player, I guess I'd try to get saxophones in people's hands. But I'm not. I'm a harmonica player, which is kind of opportune because the harmonica is the people's instrument.
Yeah.
There was a time when harmonicas were so cheap and everybody could have one. You had a harmonica when you were a kid, Vern?
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Every kid
everybody
did.
Everybody did. Around the 90s, oh my gosh, it got insanely expensive. And it doesn't happen anymore. So we give out harmonicas to folks. And in the last year and a half, beginning at Juneteenth, you were the first person, administrator, leader, to dive in and say, yeah, let's do this. So we did it. We gave out about 30 harmonicas at your Juneteenth celebration. Folks had lessons that day. From 10 minutes to an hour in some cases. Mm-hmm. So by now, a year and a half later, that was Juneteenth, 2023, mm-hmm. as of this day, November 22nd, 2024, mm-hmm. we have given, and I gave away so many yesterday, Vern.
Yep.
I haven't done the accounting yet, but we're around 300 kids and adults have gotten harmonicas, people of all ages, mostly kids, and given them for free from dues paid
and donations.
A
lot of our
absolutely.
People in the community and the Blues Society members donate specifically, earmark their donations towards the Blues Initiative.
Terry Kelly has done that. Mm-hmm. Richard Penn has done that mm-hmm. very graciously. Mm-hmm. Ed, I've forgotten Ed's last name. Ed, he's Hunter's friend.
Yes.
Ed is Hunter's friend who has been an important supporter in getting these harmonicas in the hands of the youth.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I've gone to schools in Roanoke in particular where I go to a elementary school class and I ask them, what instrument do you play? And two or three out of 30 will say, oh, well, I have a guitar or I have a keyboard and that's amazing and wonderful and I'm excited. And then I ask them, including that guitarist and the keyboardist, have you ever had music lessons before? And literally in this specific room, not a soul had a music lesson, not a soul. And I'm pleased to say, hey, here's your music lesson. Here it is right here. And it's a school that I have not gone back to, but I would love to go back to. You know the one I'm talking about?
In Roanoke.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of it, but I know what you're talking about.
I had a gig last night, and it's a little early in the morning. I apologize. My name recollection is kind of poor.
It was Ed Keaton you were trying to think
of. Ed Keaton, thank you. Hey, Ed, thank you so much.
So, for those of you who are compelled and think that this kind of work is important and valuable, blues music in the hands of young people, there are ways to support that effort, and how can people who want to donate towards the Blues Initiative, harmonicas, in-classroom programming, Thor comes out, does a dope lesson on blues music, how to play the harp, how do people donate to support this really, really awesome program?
One, if they have questions, they should contact us so they know what they're supporting, and we can, besides this podcast, we can give them more information.
Absolutely.
But through our website, even contacting us via Facebook or our email, reaching out to us, and we're really grateful for any donations and help, no matter how big or small they are, that help us keep this initiative going. Because I think it's a great thing. If it wasn't for Thor, we wouldn't have this program, to be honest with you. I mean, we've been talking about getting youth involved. It's been one of my little pet peeves, if you will, for years. And then along comes Thor, and with the energy and experience, and he's just run with this, and we can do our best to try to keep up with him. But certainly, any help we get would be appreciated. Mm-hmm. And we have another show coming up, Thor, in Pembroke. Pembroke Library is going to be at the church right across the street because it's too cold to do it outdoors. That's December 8th, I believe, right? Or 7th. Is it the 7th? It's the 7th, I believe. Yeah, I think Saturday is the 7th.
Okay.
Yes. And so, yeah, it just keeps growing and growing. And Thor has hit Juneteenth. He's hitting the schools. Mm-hmm. You know, in Roanoke, he's hitting libraries. And we're reaching kids all over. And then even last night, the show that Bunko and Roscoe McFadden and them did.
Gin and Tonic.
Gin and Tonic, it was up there. And Nina K. Kava.
Yes.
They did a show at the Milk Parlor. And
mm-hmm. In Blacksburg.
With young people, you know, college age and younger. I thought it was a big hit. And but reaching an audience that normally is not going to hear the blues if they just get on their computer or mm-hmm. radio, whatever. It's just not out there. The odds of a young person, I would say, coming across blues by just listening to mainstream stuff, it's not going to happen.
You might hear "Give Me One Reason to Stay Here," Tracy Chapman at Starbucks, but okay. That's about all. That's about it.
Yeah, it's just not. It's changed over time.
Can we pause there? Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's like this gap with a younger generation in maybe even knowing about blues music and its impact on all kinds of music?
Yeah, I mean, the blues is the gave birth to rock and roll, basically. But I think part of it is thing just a simple answer in some ways, things change. And even blues, I'm sort of partial to Chicago blues. And that was, when I was getting into it a lot, when I was younger, it was already fading to some extent because of Motown. And because it was all African-American music at one time. And then Motown taking its place. And then over time, rap, hip-hop, everything. You know, music has moved on. And that genre has just been sort of lost to us. In fact, if it wasn't for the black musicians, I would say in Chicago, helping a lot of the white musicians who were in love with the blues, taking them under their wing, so to speak, and then helped it transfer to white audiences, it would probably be even less we know about the blues. Because it was sort of fading, in my estimation, Thor might have a different view, fading even within the black community in the 70s because of Motown, which is great music too. Mm-hmm, but it was the next audience, young people, African Americans were in general across the country, were gravitating towards like Motown and that sound, and blues sort of got sort of lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons, but it's worthy of bringing back. There's no doubt.
I think a lot of it is, and we could dissect this in a variety of ways, but a lot of it's just fashion. You want to, at a certain age in particular, but certain kinds of people want the newest. They want the newest and what's hot right now. Mm-hmm. What are people wearing? What are people eating? What dieting trends are hot, you know? And they come and go and come and go, and music is the same way. And you could perceive, blues tunes could come on and a listener like that would say, oh, what is this old-fashioned stuff? I don't want to listen to this. And I can respect that. I can respect that in a sense. Because they're kinds of music that come on and that I'm not so thrilled about. But that said, I love all genres of music virtually that I can think of. Mm-hmm. I can think of a few really far out things that I don't like. But you've probably never heard of them in your life, and good for you. It's a burden I have to know about certain acts. But it's old fashioned. But the thing is, that something that I learned, if the more music I like, I'm going to be happier, to be frank, mm-hmm. because I'm going to hang around with you mm-hmm. and I'm going to hear hip hop. Mm-hmm. And if I don't like hip hop, my time with you is going to be not as good. And that's mm-hmm. really sad. And I'm going to hang around with you maybe. And you're going to play sax. Oh man, I hate sax. I don't hate sax. Mm-hmm. I hate sax. I don't want to hear that mm-hmm. stuff. That's, well, where's the lyrics in jazz? I don't hear them ever. Bluegrass, old fashioned stuff. But if I hear it and I approach it on its own terms and appreciate it, these are people doing things that they love, and they are, and maybe it's not exactly my boat, but wow, they are craftspeople. They are masters of their instrument, and they are keeping all these wonderful traditions alive, and I can respect them. And I'm a happier guy. And to be honest, sometimes that's like mind over matter. I'm trying to think of an example. Oh, here's a music that I don't like, but I'm going to, it's kind of like eating your vegetables maybe sometimes, but you know, I'm a vegetarian now, and oh my gosh, I love vegetables so much. And I could eat broccoli all day and all night. A well-prepared dish of broccoli floats my boat. I love it. And music that I didn't like. What can I think of? I'd like to share an example that I don't know if it's...
Baroque, maybe?
No, I love classical music. I love Bach. I love opera. I've learned to like it. I've learned to like it. I have maybe 100 opera albums. Yeah. I have maybe 100 opera albums. Wagner, Cecilia Bartoli, she's fantastic.
Bocelli?
No, he's more of a popularist kind of. I understand that he's very skilled.
Yeah.
And if he comes on, I'm not sad, you know? But I guess I like to dig a little deeper in stuff sometimes, sure. If that makes sense. I have a great example that I'm, like I said, I had a gig last night and I can't think of it. So thank you for indulging me.
I think right before we started the podcast today, Vern and I, we were watching this video. It was the rapper Nas, right? Nas is, and I think I said it at that point too, arguably one of the greatest hip-hop artist ever, one of the greatest, and his dad was a Mississippi blues musician, and you can see how Nas was in his hip-hop music, being from New York, was influenced by his father, who was a blues musician. I don't know if young people are aware of those connections. There's almost like this learning gap, because Nas's music lands with an audience that I would think would be interested in the origin of how he's sort of hearing and producing his music. Anything you're seeing there in terms of some of that disconnect and that learning, and how blues has even impacted one of the most popular genres in this country, being rap music?
I don't think you can find anything sort of popular today in rock and roll that hasn't been influenced by blues to some extent. But even blues has changed. And as we were talking too, every part of the country you go to, there's Piedmont blues and it's sort of this area. Earlier we listened to Hill Country Blues, R.L. Yep. Burnside, and of course Chicago blues, Zydeco. I mean, anywhere you go in that region, blues took on its sort of own form and stuff. And it's influenced. I mean, and Thor could address this as well. But even some of the younger, one of the things I've had to come to grips with is being an old guy and listening to blues since I was a teenager, is you listen to Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, John Lee Hooker. I saw him twice, and that was a great experience. And you listen to these guys and so many more, hundreds more, and you go, that's blues. And then you go forward 30 years or more, and then you listen to some of the music that's classified as blues and go, that doesn't sound exact. But one thing you have to realize, or I have to realize, is that all music changes in its form. Just because Muddy Waters sung it, we call that a blues song. He could, you know, almost anything he recorded, we'd say, well, that's the blues. And nowadays, we have Kingfish and Larkin Poe.
Gary Clark Jr.
Jerry Clark, Dylan Triplett, I don't know if you listen to him or not. And some youngsters that are coming along, that their music, when I listen to it, I go, well, but I can hear the parts of it. Some of it's straight up blues, but what I would call blues. But you can see that they've been influenced by these masters. And one of the things I just personally have to deal with is, you know, just listen and look to see the influence of these people, because they claim the blues. They claim the blues as their motivation.
Right.
And I think that's helping reaching new audiences. Although I will say this, I've seen Kingfish one time. I look around and it was a big place. A lot of people, thousands there. But there weren't that many young people, even though he's a youngster. He's early 20s. And so, again, reaching young people, that's a good question. How do you do it? They don't know the history. But I tell you what, rambling here a bit, but last night's show, there's probably 60 or 70 people in that building, and probably 40 or so right in front of Thor. And then when they're playing, they were enthused. And the woman, Nina, who helped organize it, came up afterwards. She was very excited and said it was the most energetic bass crowd they've had for one of their events there. Wow. And so basically 40 kids or more, not the 40 on the dance floor right in front and all the people hanging on the edges, they were introduced to a music that most of them had probably never heard in their life.
Wow.
So that's, and again, that's thanks to Thor's efforts. And so that's what we do, just keep chipping away a little bit on it. But yeah, because, and you participated, y'all do these lessons on Piedmont Blues. You had 90 some people in that crowd that day. It's just a way of reaching people slowly but surely. Because I think once they hear it, I'm not saying they're going to fall in love with it and replace hip hop or whatever, bluegrass or whatever their families are listening to or what they're listening to, but it opens the door for them to realize that there's other types of music and stuff. I'll make one more point if you don't mind.
Of course.
I got this from Rick Craniac, who's a local musician. He's my age, about 70, I think, and I've been playing around here. He made a comment to me years ago. I was early on as the president of the Blues Society, that when we were young, you tuned on the radio, we didn't have internet and all these options. There's so much out there. But the top 40, we were exposed to so many different types of music. And top 40 might have Johnny Cash song, and then it might have a Bo Diddley song, and then it might have Thor might remember this. He's not that old, but they even had a Ballad of the Green Beret was a, and you could have Creedence Clearwater. You could have such a variety, and so there was everything. And so if you couldn't help but be introduced to different types of music, and that right now you don't see that option much, algorithms and stuff.
Sure.
Once you get on something, that's where it keeps you. And right. So trying to break that is sort of tough, to be honest with you. I think Rick was right. You know, we had the opportunity to hear all kinds of music and be influenced by it. Now it's sort of like, here's what you get. And there's not much out there for people to have an opportunity to expand on that, I think.
I think education is 99% of the ballgame. Education has in all kinds of ways been devalued for some years, and budgetary cuts. You know, like I had music when I was in school. We had a music teacher that would come to our class every week. And we played keyboards one week, and electric pianos. We played xylophones one week. We played recorders, and were given them and got to take them home. And that costs money to hire that woman to give out these instruments, these plastic recorders that we took home. And with budget cuts and all kinds of issues in education, not only political issues, but also COVID, it's just tough. So education, I hope we can bring this back, and I'm doing my single personal best with all kinds of assistance from the Blues Initiative, from Vern, from donors, from the Christiansburg Institute, from Chris Sanchez. I could go on for some time, but to change that. And history is not the first thing on everybody's, it's not that interesting to a lot of folks. And I think that's fine. That's fine if you don't have the bandwidth, if a lot of great things are going on in your life, important things for you to get by or to have fun or to take care of your family, etc. That's A-okay. However, if we forget history, then all these things crop up over and over and over again. And if we remembered a little bit more and appreciated a little bit more all the good things and that we've created, that our culture has made, It just adds such a richness to life and such a decency to humanity. You're listening to hip-hop. I wasn't raised listening to hip-hop. Mm-hmm. But holy smokes, I can appreciate those lyrics. I can appreciate that flow. I can appreciate the hundreds, thousands of hours that folks have spent digging through the stacks, digging through the discs, digging mm-hmm. through the records, the crates, they there say. Digging through the... It took me 4 tries. It's early in the morning for me. I'm a musician. It took me 4 tries. Crates, digging through the crates. All these, I mean, hip-hop, for example, history. What if they didn't dig through the crates? What if they didn't have those jazz records from Gil Scott-Heron, from Nina Simone? What if they didn't dig through the crates and get those obscure soul discs mm-hmm. from Detroit mm-hmm. that were not Motown? They were mm-hmm. on a different label. But whoa, what's that website? Who sampled mm-hmm. what? Mm-hmm. Who yep. sampled who?
Yep.
Yeah, and you'll see in a... De La Soul song, in a Nas song.
Oh, we did that. It was with Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Good Kid, Lamar. Mad City. That's right. It was a Muddy Waters sample.
Sampling yeah. Muddy, sampling the Isley Brothers, all this stuff. What if those folks in hip-hop mm-hmm. ignored history? Right. They're just all about the new stuff. Well, you know, these artists would not be the same. Mm-mm. They would not be the same. What a loss. What a loss.
Yeah, the same. It goes more the blues. The only reason it's as popular as it is because, well, in large part, 78s, 45s making it to England and Rolling Stones and some of these other English bands. They were in love with these blues artists. They were Muddy Waters. They were their heroes. And in fact, isn't that one of the first things the Stones did when they came to America was search him out? Mm-hmm. And were sort of surprised to find out he sort of wasn't famous because he was famous to them. Mm-hmm. A lot of these blues artists were famous in Europe, and they had influence. Fleetwood Mac, I have their first album somewhere, CD. They were all blues. Their first album was all blues, 100%.
Oh, their first... I don't know, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, all blues. I mean, all these bands.
Peter Green.
Yeah, and he's great. They had an influence, but and again, digging through the stacks, looking through the crates and stuff, and at these music stores. And that used to be a thing when we were kids. You go in there, it might have a blues section or something, and you're over there just.
Yep.
Pulling them and looking,
CDs.
And you come across stuff, and you buy stuff on a whim sometimes. I'll check this out, and stuff. But those options are pretty much gone now. But you know, but yeah, certainly. I mean, if those artists in Europe hadn't have dug through and found these recordings and had it influence their type of music. I mean, everybody, man, I think Led Zeppelin was I saw this thing a few years ago. It's funny that Led Zeppelin always played When the Levee Breaks. And I saw some musicologist wrote this article. He said Led Zeppelin's done that song so many times they actually think they wrote it. But it was written by mm-hmm. Memphis Minnie decades and decades before.
I visited her gravesite.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, it's beautiful. Wow. Beautiful place in Mississippi.
And didn't Bonnie Raitt pay for that tombstone?
I'm not sure. I don't recall.
But again, it takes a little effort. It's there. The history is rich. There's a lot of these universities have tons of information there they've collected. There's museums, and of course there's the Blues Hall of Fame in Memphis and stuff. But, you know, again, I think Thor makes a great point earlier. Bluegrass is, it can make us jealous. And not that it's not great music, certainly mm-hmm. is, and great talent. But, yeah, it's so easy to connect with that, especially in this region, where it's harder with blues, for sure.
I've heard this thing said a few times, that genius is taking two different things, two different disparate things that don't really make sense together and put them together and make them make sense. For example, hip-hop, genius. We dig through the crates, we appreciate the history. But what enabled us to do that? Oh, computers, technology, sampling, technology, the latest thing at the time, sampling in the 80s, mm-hmm. plus old records from the 60s and earlier, but whatever you got, whatever sounds great, whatever's a good groove. And the thing is, if we go on, if we don't appreciate these things, if we don't appreciate achievement and creativity and accomplishment, I'll call it accomplishment or positivity, then we could lose it. We could lose it all. A lot of stuff on the internet is appreciating, alas, destruction, is destroying, is trolling. Oh, I burned that person. Mm-hmm. What a sick burn. Mm-hmm. I don't like this, that, or the other. I have a video on my algorithm because it makes people angry. And if we're just all about, as a culture, as a planet, destroying stuff, just we lose more and more all the time of our humanity, of our accomplishment. And it's so sad because there will be times in everybody's life when they will want something that's no longer there. And it's sad. Don't support live music. Live music. I got it in my earbuds. I carry exactly the music that I want all the time, let's say. So I don't support live music. There's a band in that bar. They're not playing my single favorite song. I don't like how that person looks. They're not like me. I'm going to walk by. Oh, people are clapping. I could care less. Don't support live music. You know what's going to happen to live music? It's going to be gone. And it's going to be replaced by computer-made music. Which I can see the virtue of. I have a few AI songs that I love. Mm-hmm. But there'll be a time, for example, when that person that hates live music, that doesn't support or respect in any way live music. Hey, we need a band for the wedding. We need a band for the wedding. Who are you going to hire? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's nobody to hire. And if there is somebody to hire, they may not be so good anymore because we haven't been supporting it. Mm-hmm. You know, if a person spends a lot of time and a lot of money on equipment, say, a lot of time perfecting their craft, and then it's disrespected, I guess, mm-hmm. if I may use that word, okay. You know, there's other stuff to do. There's other stuff to do. I love my family. I love my dogs. I love AI songs on occasion. I have other stuff to do. Don't ignore it. Ignore it and it'll go away and it'll be a grievous loss. Music is one of humanity's. There's a writer, Jeff Tweedy. He's the leader of a band called Wilco. And he said, and this touched me, but he said that music is one of the ways that we can be godlike. Where was Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash? Where was it before it was written or conceived? Well, it was nothing. Mm-hmm. It was the universe. It was gas. It was dust. And then Johnny Cash, with some supportive musicians, staff, etc., brought that into being. And it is almost godlike. It is almost godlike. It is so powerful and such a gift. And I don't want to give it over to computers. I don't want to give it all to computers.
Absolutely not.
Because I like creating. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate what computers do, as I've acknowledged mm-hmm. with hip-hop, just for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. But,
I agree with that. It is... I talk to a lot of youngsters because I'm retired. I still teach a few classes as an adjunct. And I am amazed at the rare few that actually go and listen to live music anywhere. Because I ask them all the time. Does anybody go? I asked a class of about 20 students the other day if they ever went to the milk parlor. Only one of them even knew what it was. And when I was younger, again, not to be one of those in the good old days, it wasn't like that. It wasn't so good all the time, but live music was the thing, if, you know, and when you think back and maybe Thor's different, I've listened to a billion albums. I love to listen to music on the computer, or whatever. in my car. But the best music I've ever heard was always live. Always. There's no album by anybody that can come close to hearing a band play live and that type of thing. I mean, again, I see John Lee Hooker live. I have listened to, I bet you, 1,000 of his songs over the years, a lot of them probably 50, 60 times each. But yeah, it doesn't come close to watching him, you know, doing it live. So yeah, I think live music is fading a little bit. I mean, we at least in some areas and some for the general public and young people, I don't think they go as to live music as much as they would have a generation or two back.
So with you, Vern, being the chair of the Blues Society here in the Valley, in the New River, what can you kind of just share with us how you got involved and what some of your passion and love of blues music and kind of brought you into that leadership role as chair of the board?
I got roped in. It was an accident. I wasn't trying to become president, but sort of pushed into it a little bit. But not actually, I again, like pure luck, if you will. My family took me out for my birthday one Friday night to the, it's no longer around, Fatback Soul Shack, because they heard it was a blues thing and they knew I loved the blues. I get out there and, like me, I can't remember the band that was playing, but during intermission, they were taking a break. One of the musicians got to the microphone and said, "Hey, you know, if anyone's interested in the Blues Society, we the New River Blues Society, the vice president is sitting right over here, Michelle Canterbury, and just see her." I about jumped out of my chair because I was having to drive to Roanoke or North Carolina to see blues shows, and the only blues society I knew about was in Roanoke or North Carolina, and I'm always checking the internet and stuff, looking for, you know, shows. So I immediately went over and talked to her, and I started attending meetings, and that's how I got more involved. But yeah, if they hadn't taken me out to that dinner, I would have never known about it. So pure luck as far as getting involved in the Blues Society. But when I first did become president, I really had no experience. I've experienced in chairing other organizations, environmental, political things in the past, but never music. And I've got to say, Michelle, and especially Bill Smith and Ray Williams, who's no longer living in the area, those three were instrumental in helping me because, you know, just guiding me through dealing with musicians to getting things organized, because I really didn't have the experience to do that. And if it wasn't, Ray really helped me a ton. I spent hours with him talking, running, kicking, like me and Thor do now. I mean, you do just kicking around ideas and stuff. And through their guidance and help, I've become a little more proficient, still have so much to learn. But that's sort of how it had happened for me, just having to get lucky to be out there that night when they mentioned it, or I would never. But they didn't have a Facebook presence or anything, so there was no way for me to know anything about them.
Can you, maybe just a few minutes, there's like the work that nonprofits do that are public facing. You do programming. People see Thor out there giving lessons. He's got harmonicas. It's all very exciting and it's truly valuable. What a lot of people don't get to see are the volunteer board members, but kind of behind the scenes, who are doing administrative work. They're doing the fundraising. They're communicating as a board to make sure that the mission is accomplished. As the chair of the board, can you give some insight into some of that process and how it translates into mission success?
I'll do my best. Yeah, our bylaws don't say this, but we make it clear to anyone who wants to be on the board, is recommended to us or approaches us individually, is that we are a working board. It's not just show up every couple months to a meeting or throw up your hand to vote yes or no. That type of thing. We need worker bees, and we've been fortunate that most of the people on our board have, they have an expertise in some cases, experience in some areas, that they can run with programs. We have people that are good at fundraising. We have is going to be our new vice president, Chris Giles, is a lawyer, so that helps us. He does our taxes. He gives us advice on things. It's helped us rework our bylaws through the COVID era and stuff. But yeah, we have so many good board members, and they do what they can. Some have more time than others. But that's the main thing that we've been able to recruit, if you will. Because when I first started, I would simply ask, because I wasn't familiar with the people in the area in Blacksburg.
Right, right.
And I would ask who would be a good board member. And people say, oh, I know somebody. Lynn Brammer, who's one of our most active board members. Someone came and said, do you know Lynn Brammer? And of course, I did not. They said, oh, you got to get Lynn.
Lynn's great.
And next thing you know, we have Lynn on board, and she's just amazing, helping us out. So yeah, we have people from all walks of life, musicians. We have people that have worked in business. We have people that are done a lot of charity work and stuff, and working with other organizations in the community. They all bring something to the table that we're able to sort of tap into at different times during the year. And and we're always looking. We just got a new board member, Jameis Bittrick, who does the local radio show on Thursday evenings. 5:30 to 7 blues after hours, and he'll bring, you know, he's got connection to the radio station and younger audience, and so we've been really fortunate with our board members, you know, that have come and go over the years and stuff. So,
yeah, I think Vern talking about a working board is really important, because again, the mission of the Blues Society or any nonprofit is made possible by the volunteer labor of people who are passionate and dedicated to the mission. And Vern hasn't said it, but everyone knows that Vern does a tremendous amount of administrative coordinating on the board level.
Trying to keep
the
up,
board
trying,
and the team
always
aligned.
Trying to keep the boat afloat. But I want to add one thing, because we take it for granted because we're sitting here shooting a bull like we do often. Our relationship with Christiansburg Institute has, like getting Thor on board, has been a real lifesaver for us too, because of your contacts, your expertise, and all your skills, and even to do this podcast. I mean, we wouldn't be doing this without CI's involvement. And we're teaming up, doing a plug, but we're teaming up for a show in February and for an exhibit at a museum as well, show in Lyric in February. So we've teamed up on a number of projects already, and we'll continue to do so. And that's been really powerful for us.
Yeah, when we've done some programming together, and like Thor and I did a Blues Initiative workshop at the Blacksburg Public Library. Big shout out to the Blacksburg Public Library. That was this year. I'm not sure exactly when, but that was a blast. Y'all just talked about last night, Milk Parlor, really great music venue and restaurant in Blacksburg, right?
It's sort of old school. It's like reminded me of going back to college in my day. Go down the stairs and there it is, right?
So I guess in closing then, but let me pause. Thor, anything you're thinking about? You want to jam?
Thanks so much. I did want to say one thing. One reason that blues education is especially valuable in a way that other music education may not be is that it is an incredibly inclusive music. And I'm going to go so far as to say, if you'll allow me, to say it's one of the things about it is it's easier. I can teach an opera appreciation class. I could teach a jazz appreciation class. I could teach a classical music appreciation class, and I'd love to do all those things. I love all that music. I could do that. Could I have that room of middle schoolers singing opera at the end? Could I have that room folks, retirees at the home playing sax solos, jamming on Charlie Parker tunes at the end? I cannot. I don't think any human can. If you can, call me. I want to know what you're doing. It's awesome. But I can because blues is not the most complicated music. Oh, it's complicated to play it like a master, but I can give a harmonica with the three chords that are on a harmonica, that a child's toy in some people's estimation, and I can have folks playing blues in 20 minutes, 10 minutes if they're really ambitious. And I proved it yesterday. Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely.
I proved it 60, 70 times yesterday. If you can breathe, you can play harmonica. And it's not just harmonica even. I don't play piano, but I could show you how to play blues on piano. It's three chords. Give me 3-4 minutes. I can show you those chords. Guitar is a similar experience. So anyway, that's why it's inclusive. It gets you going. It gets folks going, creating immediately. And I think that is wonderful.
I do too, and that's perfect then. So what are some ways that people can plug in to upcoming, like this is it, upcoming events, programs, shout out, social media? What are ways that people can come closer to learning about and maybe even playing some blues music?
Well, we do try to keep our Facebook up to date the best we can, and with upcoming events. Yep. One thing I've encouraged people and is to just contact and get on our email list. And we have over 500. It's gotten so big that I have to send two emails because Gmail will only let you send 500 contacts at a time. Mm-hmm. So I just every week, usually on Monday or Tuesday morning, I will send out a list of upcoming blues events, mostly some related to our stuff, but often other, if there's a famous musician in Roanoke or something, we'll list that, or someone else is playing at Floyd, we list that we're not connected to, so that people know where they could go to hear some blues. And it's no obligation, although we wish they would join, become a member and pay the dues. Mm-hmm. They can just get our email list and get a weekly update on what's happening, so they'll know where to go. That's the easiest way. Visit our website, Facebook page.
And Vern, if people who want to reach out to become a member or just have some questions, they want to get involved in a program they're seeing, the best way to do that via email is nrbluesociety@gmail.com.
Yep,
that's the best way to contact.
Yep, because I'll see it and can answer their questions and that type of thing. Sometimes, to be honest with you, they shoot something to Facebook. The Facebook administrator may not see it right away.
Yep.
But emails I check every day, numerous times, so I can get back to people quicker that way. So.
And the official website is the NewRiverBluesSociety.com.
Correct.
So that will be the website, and y'all have the email. We'll make sure we get that out to you all as well.
And then, of course, Facebook.
Facebook, too. Yep.
Support live music. Support live music. Make it worth folks' while, and they'll keep doing it. Mm-hmm. We have fundraisers intermittently for the Blues Initiative, and we're going to need some sort of soon, because we gave out a lot of harps yesterday.
Right. Need more harmonicas, indeed.
It might be as many as 70 that we gave out yesterday. Mm-hmm. 70 wow. harmonicas plus wow. lessons.
And plus we have another show, like I say, coming up December 7th.
So we're going to have to order some more. So. They're $5 each, so we've given certainly $1,500 worth of harmonicas out in the last year and a half.
And these are good harmonicas. These are quality harmonicas in the hands of people.
I test out cheap harmonicas when I'm at a dollar store or a $5 store or wherever, Cracker Barrel. I'll buy the $5 or $10 harmonica. I've bought 24 exploring this space, and the brilliant folks at Fret Mill in Roanoke had the magic one, and it's they sell it retail for $7 or $8, and it's great. It's great for $7 or $8. It's the company BEE. And Fret Mill in Roanoke is the place to get it, because BEE, that company, makes so many harmonicas, some of them are not good.
As we've learned.
As we also discovered. Mm. How do you tell the difference? I don't know that I even can. So I just buy them from Fret Mill in Roanoke.
Right. We've gotten high quality harps from them. We've bought some other beads that look exactly
the same box.
And they are same box, same everything. And then you go to play them, and they're not the same thing. So we make sure we get a
good quality harps.
Yeah, and when you buy them in sort of a bulk, we get a little cheaper price, so it helps us out as well.
And depending on how serious you want to take harp playing, this is like an introductory harp, but Thor, from my own experience, can definitely guide you towards other harmonicas that might be of interest.
Well, another great source is Bridge Caldro Music in Christiansburg.
Yep.
And they're very responsive to my requests. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Because I asked them to carry one brand in particular 1 week, and I went back the week later, and there it is. And they're glorious instruments. Mm-hmm. They are better than the BEE, and they should be, because they cost about twice as much. Oh, but it's still such a bargain. $12.99, they're the Fender Blues Deluxe, and you can get them. And the difference is, number one, they'll be easier to play. Number two, they will be more durable. They'll last longer. They're higher quality. And finally, they come in lots of different keys, so you can play lots of different songs. Yes.
And so, go ahead.
No, I was going to add one thing. We don't have a perfect structure in place, but if someone's interested in expanding on what they get when Thor introduces the harmonica, we make clear all they do is get up with us.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
we will, and we have, not with harmonicas, but with drum equipment, helped purchase equipment for people who are sticking with it.
A 15-year-old, yeah.
Yeah. If they're working with it and want to learn the blues, we will do our best to get them some lessons, connect them with people where they can play. And with equipment, if we can't buy the whole instrument, at least help out with part of it and stuff like that, so they can continue to learn. So yeah, we'll be there for anyone that you know. It's not just, hey, here's a $5 harmonica and an hour and 15-minute lesson. Good luck. It's like, hey, if you want to learn more, no matter what age, 8 to 80. We'll do what we can to help
one,
you.
One and a half to 80, Vern.
Yeah, one and a half. I'm not going there with that story.
That didn't go that well. Yeah. Would you believe it?
Yeah.
Listeners?
Well, as we close, just each of you will start with Thor. If there's one thing you want someone to know about blues music or about the New River Blues Society, what is that one thing you would like that person to know?
I think it's about people. It's about people. And if you think this is important, you could use your skills and influence or just energy to make such a difference. Whether it be giving a donation, whether it is making a Facebook post or tagging something or forwarding it to somebody, every little bit helps. Boy, and every big thing helps. One issue we have is about is venues. Some venues just don't want blues, and we could use more venues. And it just Lefties, for example. Somebody knew somebody at Lefties, so we're playing at Lefties. How'd it go? It went great. You remember that event? Somebody knew somebody at Milk Parlor. How'd that go? It went great. So if you know anybody, if you can think of any ideas, we'd love to hear them. We'd love to participate with you. It's one of the reasons that we are a society, a bunch of people working together. I hope that was a decent answer. It was not my best work, but I got a couple hobby horses, and that was one of them. Sorry.
I was going to say, as I was sitting here thinking, what's the one thing? Well,
yeah, it's hard.
We try to acknowledge the help we've gotten from a lot of folks,
mm-hmm.
but the venues, which I was going to mention, the venues that have helped us out for years, pre-COVID and as soon as COVID sort of broke, the Eastern Divide Brewery,
mm-hmm.
we've hosted a series out there, Blues, Brews, and Bloodies, once a month for 4 months, well attended, a lot of fun. The Rising Silo Brewery, not because of us, it was the Blue Monday band sort of hooked that up. But every Wednesday night, they have an open mic blues jam out there. And they also have blues bands play on the weekends sometimes out there. And the Brick House Pizza in Radford has also, we're having our holiday party there. And we've done shows out there. But we are always looking for other places to introduce different audiences to the blues. So exactly what Thor said, you know, if someone listening has some ideas, please let us know. We'd love it. But thanks to all the others that continue to book blues acts and work with us in particular, like the Eastern Divide and all, to get shows in. And also, Laz, I want to give credit. The Lyric and the Pulaski Theater, we've done shows there.
Absolutely.
And they've been pretty successful, brought in some pretty good blues acts, and we're hoping to continue to work with them in the future as well.
If you know a teacher who might appreciate an hour of music in his or her class, we would love to visit your class, a library, a museum, your social organization, a house party, throw one, we'll come. Some of us will come anyway. It's about the society.
Well, that's about it. I want to thank Thor Haynes and Vern Kelly. Vern is the chair of the New River Blues Society. And Thor is a board member at the society. And here we are in the CI podcast studio. Also want to shout out Hayden Scott, our student intern, who is our sound engineer today for the podcast. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Hey.